We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
This week, I wanted to start with highlighting our Ithaca rally tomorrow at 1:30 p.m. in Commons. This is our calling all problem solvers to join us, to stand up for our rights and freedom rally that we will be holding there at the Commons, and then presenting a flag on over the Capitol to the Ithaca mayor, so that we can stand in unison to send a message that we stand up against all extremism, all hatred, and stand up for our rights and freedom in our country. And these rights extend, and freedom extend to all folks on both sides of the aisle, and that free speech, the right to freedom of expression, and regardless of political views, are going to be protected in our communities across the district. And obviously, this occurs in the backdrop of an event we had up there in Ithaca that I personally attended in regards to the Republican headquarters, and saw some folks that were expressing their views that were very much counter to obviously my views, and they expressed themselves in a very aggressive way, in ways that I would not expect my children to express themselves, and would hold them accountable if my own children or myself engaged in that type of behavior. But they have a right to do that. I recognize that. And as I've reached out to the mayor of Ithaca, I think it would be very prudent and wise for us to stand together at this rally to say that we are united in standing up for our rights on both across the political spectrums. And we are standing up for freedom at a time when we are dealing with such division in our country. And at the same time, when we see acts of hatred both on both sides, when it comes to acts that we saw there in Ithaca a few weeks ago at the Republican headquarters, but also as you see the anti-Semitism and other and racism acts there in Ithaca, and other forms of hatred that I have been made aware of. That hatred and anger such as that has no place in our communities, and especially when it comes to violence such as what occurred at my home and what occurred at my campaign headquarters, that we should be uniting as one voice in our communities in particular to say that is unacceptable. And so I encourage all of you to join us in highlighting this rally tomorrow at 1:30 p.m. And hopefully what we will demonstrate to all those in the district, in the state, and to the country, that we can stand together on both sides of the aisle and send a message that hatred, violence is unacceptable in our political discourse, and that in America, we stand up for your rights. We stand up for your freedoms in a united voice, and we will do it in a way that democracy allows us to do it and allows us to resolve our disputes at the ballot box rather than engaging in any type of physical violence or anything of that type of hatred or violence that we've seen on display here recently. So with that, we will open it up to questions.
Great. Thank you, Tom. All right, let's start with Gary from Buffalo News.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Jerry, how you doing?
Good, good. I'm going to ask you kind of a logistical question here about what you're expecting on election night. Do you think you'll know the results of your election on that night, or do you think that the number of absentee ballots might make it so that you won't know?
Well, that's a great question, and I don't think we'll know that until we actually have the vote tallies coming in from early voting and actually from the election day itself. We have a good idea of what the absentee ballots are out and what's coming in. So we could have, I'm confident that we could be in a position to know the results on election day. And with this record turnout, too, I'm getting a sense of just so much support for our efforts. And so, we'll see as we continue to monitor how the election tallies are coming in as we speak. But it's all going to be dependent, Jerry, when we see what happens through election day. And so too early to tell you exactly what to expect on election night.
How about the presidential election? Do you think we'll know who won that on that night?
It's another great question. And I think you're in the same situation. I think also the presidential election, as I see it, is going to be close, and it's going to come down to six or so states and precincts across those states are going to make that determination. So, I anticipate that it's going to be close. That means you're probably going to have to go through some re-canvassing, and you're going to have to go through all the litigation that's associated with it. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's a Bush-Gore type of scenario. So again, until you actually get through election night and see where the vote tallies come in from the early voting tallies that are already known and the election day results, then you'll have a better sense of how long it's going to drag out.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Jerry. All right, let's go to Eric Watson with Bloomberg. Do you have a question, Eric?
I do. Mr. Reed, thanks for doing this call. I really appreciate it. Just shifting gears a little bit to the stimulus, you had a problem solver's letter a couple of days ago saying if we don't get a bill before the election, it might wait until February. It looks like there's been really no measurable progress in the last couple of days. People pretty much seem resigned at this point to no deal before the election. What's your sense of when we might see something, and what's your outlook and comment on the state of affairs? Thank you so much.
So I have a call later today. I'm participating in with the Treasury Secretary, and so I hope I'll get a better feel for exactly where we stand in real time here. But what I am aware of, and my assessment still stands, that if we don't get something here soon, and by that I mean over the next few days in regards to an agreement in principle and in writing between the Speaker and the White House, then I think we're looking at this thing going well into potentially January at the earliest, getting resolved more likely February, just given the nature of the politics. And a lot of it's going to be dependent on the outcome of the election. And that's a shame, because there's still people that are suffering in the meantime. I just had a call with some senators that we're working with closely, and we're trying to come up with Plan A, which is push a package immediately and continue down this path as we speak. Trying to get it done soon, but obviously the reality of a plan B and C needs to be developed. And so stay tuned, but we're doing everything we can to put the people first and get a package done sooner rather than later. But it is just a shame with the leaders that are in the room negotiating the finer details of this, just saying they want to focus on politics rather than relieve the suffering of American people that are in need today. I'm of the mindset, take care of the people and let the politics take care of itself.
Well, why do you say February? Do you think that the election results won't be known and people will still be jockeying for position until that time? Or why that time frame?
Yeah, because you're going to be looking at a combination of a couple things. You have a real serious likelihood, to Jerry Zaremski's question, of this litigation and the unknown about the election causing a delay and no one knowing how to negotiate or where to negotiate from, because they don't know who's going to be the president. They don't know potentially where the Senate's going to be at in regards to a lot of pundits are saying that's going to be a close call also. And so when you take that into consideration, then plus if folks think the White House is going to flip and the Senate's going to flip and they're going into a position of power in those scenarios. They're going to hold out. What I've heard over the years is, we'll wait till we get in power, and then we'll get our wish list checked off, and we will get everything that we want, and they'll make a perfect the enemy of good, and then they'll just drag it out until they're firmly cemented into a position of power, and so therefore you're looking at a January, February. If you have a Biden administration with a majority in the Senate, or if you have a Trump administration with a majority in the Senate, you could say we'll hold out till we get the majority under our legs, and then they, you know, we get into gridlock where they have to fight each other all the way through. And so that's why the February timeframe keeps coming back, and maybe January, you know, because you do have the administration change there at the end of the third week of January. That's why, you know, that February, you give them a week to get their legs under them with a new administration, or with a new Trump administration, you may be able to do a little bit sooner because the majority in the Senate will be clarified by, obviously, the first week of January.
Do you think Pelosi's been delaying this for political reasons? It seems like it's such small pieces of this that are holding it up at this point out of a $2 trillion package.
In my personal opinion, it is clear to me now. I was hopeful that she was sincere and that she was going to cut a deal for the American people and was negotiating in good faith. But it is clear to me that it was Pelosi and Schumer now showing their true cards that they were never going to do a deal because they were putting politics first.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Yep, thank you.
Thank you. All right, let's go to Tom Bucket with WBEN, and also congrats on 25 years in radio. I saw that online today, so I figured I would give you a shout out.
Well, thank you very much.
Congrats,
for that.
Tom.
Thank you, Congressman. Congressman, going back to the campaign here, what do you feel will be the big issue that's going to boil down to whether you are reelected or Tracy Matrano wins the election next week?
I think it's going to be the service that we've done to the people, not only in COVID-19, but over our tenure in Congress. And I think that is the fundamental issue I hear about on the campaign trail, where people who are even our arch enemies give us begrudgingly good marks and saying, you know, you have shown up, you have listened, and you have delivered, even when we've disagreed in regards to things that we can do for constituents and help them in their needs. And so I think that's going to be one of the biggest different issues between us and her, and our willingness to listen to folks on both sides.
And how vital do you think NY23 will be for control of the House?
Well, you know, obviously every seat is going to be important in regards to the control of the House. And, you know, that's why we, you know, think, as we go forward, we always want to put our record and make sure that we put our strongest case forward and make sure the contrast is known between ourselves and our opponent. And we don't want to regress in any way in regards to gaining that majority. And we'll do our part in regards to trying to secure as many districts on the Republican side of the ledger, because I do believe Republican policies are better for the country, as we saw with the unleashing of the economy prior to COVID-19. I think those policies serve us well when it comes to things like China and enforcing our trade policies. And so I'm a big believer. I'm a proud Republican. I'm willing to be challenged. I'm willing to listen to the other side. But I believe our policies at their root are better policies for the American people. And that includes those of the 23rd Congressional District.
And which issues, very quickly, do you feel are the most important in the 23rd District?
You know, when it comes to, you know, obviously right now, it's COVID-19, addressing the needs to get us to the ultimate solution, which is a vaccine. And that's coming. Very confident in telling folks that I am being briefed on where the vaccine status is. Pretty confident talking to the scientists that they've cracked the science on the virus, and that we just have to get through the review process to make sure we show that it's effective and it's safe. And so that, to me, is the top priority. And then as we come out of the crisis, it's the economy, get people back into jobs and growing jobs again, and making sure that we're having jobs not only here in the district, But bringing jobs back from overseas and having those supply chains and those opportunities of the next generation jobs right here on American soil so that we never get caught in a situation again where our manufacturing base and our job space are primarily located elsewhere.
Thank you, Congressman.
Yep, thank you.
Thanks, Tom. All right, let's go to Jason Sample.
Yes, good afternoon, Tom.
Hey, good afternoon, Jason.
So I just wanted to follow up with an issue that's been part of the campaign throughout the campaign season, and that is funding for law enforcement. Obviously, you've gone on record and made it very clear that you do not support defunding law enforcement. But just looking at the other side of the coin, do you support increasing funding for law enforcement? Do you think it's an adequate amount currently what Congress is providing for law enforcement, or do you think that should be adjusted even in spite of the financial challenges that are looming on the horizon?
Yeah, so when it comes to funding law enforcement, I think you're absolutely right, Jason. I do come on the side of supporting our men and women in law enforcement, making sure they have the resources to do their job safely. And that means supporting that funding. And when it comes to increasing funding, I support increasing funding for law enforcement in regards to law enforcement officers and departments that are doing it best. And so if they can show that they are achieving the accreditation, they are the ones that are performing above and beyond, that those law enforcement agencies should get increased funding and rewarded for that behavior. So that's where I would support increased funding for our men and women in law enforcement. But I would also make sure that all law enforcement officers have the resources like the necessary equipment to do the job so that they have the best chance to do the job safely, to come home to their families after the shift is over safely. And that also things like body cameras and other things that could be part of police reform, making sure they have equipment to help us address the issues of police accountability. I think we could come into a common agreement and bipartisan agreement to support.
Is there a specific metric that you look toward into determining the performance of police departments in your district and around the country? Is it the number of arrests, or is there another metric that you look at to determine how successful they are?
So yeah, when I've talked with Karen Bass and the Congressional Black Caucus and others on this issue, I think there's broad consensus that if you look at the Department of Justice and you look at the accreditation standards, and there's about 12 different metrics that they primarily use, and then there's sub-metrics that, it's my understanding, that measure into the dozens upon dozens. But there's some key metrics that the Department of Justice puts out. It's not just arrest. It's not. It's about multiple metrics that they perform at, training, how they perform arrest, how they engage in de-escalation measures, how community policing is performed. And so you get into this broad metric type of accreditation and training levels that they secure and maintain. And it's about maintaining those standards. It's also a key metric, is my understanding. And so that is what I would be looking at. There's no black or white one or two metrics. It's a multitude of metrics that the Department of Justice puts out, as well as accreditation standards that are out there and other agencies that review law enforcement operation.
All right, just a quick follow-up. So the COPS program is the one I'm most familiar with. I think it's the one they receive here in Jamestown to help them out with the local law enforcement effort here. $400 million in COPS funding was provided by the Department of Justice in 2020. Is that an adequate amount for our country and law enforcement in our country?
So the COPS program, if we're talking about the same thing, Jason, those are direct lines at the federal level that go to assist law enforcement. And so there are other lines that are also involved here with law enforcement. Obviously, law enforcement is something that is a priority that I support. And so not only COPS funding, but also I'm a big supporter of community policing, things like SROs in our schools. And so I support those additional lines beyond just COPS.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep, thank you.
Thanks, sir. All right, let's go to Terry Frank. Do you have a question, Terry?
Yes. Good afternoon, Tom.
Hey, good afternoon, Terry.
I did want to ask for a follow-up, if at all possible, regarding the brick that was thrown through the window at your campaign headquarters and the brick in the dead animal found on your property there in Corning. Anything new on those investigations?
They are moving forward, I have been briefed on some additional information that is going on, but those matters are continuing to go through the investigation process, and so stay tuned on those. But, you know, obviously it's very concerning, and I will take a moment here to thank all the folks, especially the incident that occurred at my home with the brick with my child's name on it and the dead rat with a noose around it. You know, when my wife uncovered that, obviously very concerning to all of us in our family. But thank you to the folks in the community that reached out. The amount of support we received has been overwhelming, and it's been very, very much appreciated, not only by me, but my wife and our entire family. So we really appreciate that support. But I also would remind those who did that, that have engaged in these attacks, that we will not be intimidated. We know what we're fighting for. We know what we're standing for. And we will not be intimidated. We will not stand down. And I am more energized and believe in what I am doing now more than ever. And America's worth the fight. And I'm in the fight 150% now because of what happened. And to all the cowards out there, that are trying to intimidate us online, that are trying to intimidate us with these brick multiple events, I guess they don't realize who I am and who we are. And we will stand firm, and we will continue on this journey.
A quick follow-up, Tom, because I know that you're going to be early voting. I wanted to get your thoughts and what you've heard about early voting across the district. I know here in Chautauqua County, the early voting turnout's been pretty good.
Yeah, no, I did vote early this morning with my wife and my son, and we waited in line like everyone else. But I will tell you, it was rather quick. They're using the safety mechanisms to wiping down all the equipment that you use in order to do it, just like voting on election day, where you fill out the paper ballot, fill the little ovals out, put it through the machine. And I just encourage people, have your voice heard this cycle. It is so critical that your voice count, and early voting is just a tool that allows you to do that. And so we encourage folks, get out there, early vote, and if not, show up on election day early, because you do not want to show up and then all of a sudden come to find out the lines are so long, or that the doors are shut because you got there late, or the snow started to fall, or the weather was bad, or something happened where your voice didn't count this election cycle. So early voting is a tool that allows you to make sure that your voice is heard. We encourage you. Get out there to vote and get it count and get it to count early.
All right. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Thanks, Terry. All right, let's go to Dave Raleigh. Do you have a question, Dave?
Tom, just a follow-up to Terry's earlier question. What police authorities are investigating these two incidents?
Well, I would like to definitely thank our local police department here, Corning Police Department, the FBI, as well as the U.S. Capitol Police, and then also adjoining law enforcement agencies that have been brought into the investigation. And so I just got to tell you, I am very impressed by the professionalism of these law enforcement agencies involved. I appreciate U.S. Attorney Kennedy's outreach involvement here, and I will just tell you I'm very confident and hopeful that with their investigative tools and their professionalism that the culprit will be apprehended and justice will be served, and rightfully so, because there is no place in our democracy for acts of intimidation and violence such as these two brick throwing events represent. And so I just look forward to justice being done. And we respect those in law enforcement for doing what they're doing, and we offer them our family thanks.
And also, how is your family holding up under this?
Thank you for that question. And, you know, I will just tell you, the day after and the day of has been much different than as each day goes by. It's a little bit better, just like anybody else who goes through something like that. But I will tell you that you're talking about a child. You're talking about your own children, and so it impacts a mother, it impacts a father, and anyone who has a child understands what I'm saying when I say that. And I would be not being straight with you. I would be lying to you if I said it didn't impact me as a human being. But that being said, each day, with the help of so many people around the district, around the state, and around the country, that have reached out to us, it allows us to keep moving forward, and it just allows us to stand stronger to this extremism that is represented by that brick. And it just reinvigorates me every day that we'll get through this, and we are getting through it. But we'll just leave it at that.
Okay, Tom. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Dave. All right, let's go to Lucas Day. Did you have a question, Lucas?
Hi, Congressman. I just wanted to ask you real quick. Earlier today, you announced a $200,000 grant for Cornell Agritech here in Geneva. Can you just talk about the importance of that grant and that money coming to our area and what it will be used for?
Yeah, this is a USDA grant, and we were glad to secure this money for the research and the agri opportunities that it will go towards when it comes to agribusiness and research that it will provide. And it goes towards, in my understanding, of what they're pursuing there is to kind of protect us from those invasive and those diseases that potentially could take down our opportunities in agricultural developments that are on the horizon. And so it is a investment in the future, and to secure almost $200,000 from the USDA for that, I think is going to be money well spent, given the nature of where I know that money is going and the people that are utilizing it to use their best and brightest minds to put us in a position to protect our agricultural development opportunities in the future.
And do you worry about tomorrow's event in Ithaca again attracting the same type of response that you received last week? I know you said it's going to be kind of a bipartisan type of event, but do you worry these types of people will still show up to try to disrupt it and, again, get their viewpoints across in a not-so-polite way?
Yeah. You know, I mean, I'm not naive enough to think that that is not a situation that could develop. But by bringing in both sides, by inviting both sides, and also for sending the message up front that what we are doing by doing it on the commons is sending a message of unity, that we are standing up for your rights and for freedom itself. And also, we are also standing up for all against all hatred and all racism and anti-Semitism that I know has happened there in the city of Ithaca. I would hope that would be a message of hope and optimism that would repel any type of counter-protest like we saw there last week. And I also hope it sends a message to those that may want to try to intimidate us that you will not intimidate us. We had this horrific situation at our home in between there. But we are still going to stand up and do our job and stand for your rights and for freedom. And we are not going to be intimidated by anyone from the events last week in Ithaca or other events that occurred since then. And we're going to continue to show up, and we're going to do it in a way that that we have demonstrated we take on those that disagree with us. We do it with respect. We do it with an openness to their point of view and recognition that they have a right to engage in that type of behavior if they so choose. But we also have a right to express ourselves, and we have a right to stand firm and stand strong against it. And I just hope those that watch and the audience that's listening that are not those individuals are the ones that we really are talking to, and then says, the way we handle this is we handle this with respect, nonviolence, and we settle our disputes at the ballot box and through democracy.
Thank you, Congressman.
Thank you, Lucas.
Thanks, Lucas. All right, let's go to Rick Miller. Do you have a question, Rick?
Good afternoon, Congressman.
Good afternoon, Rick.
Say, do you think that, your close association with the president will cost you any votes in the 23rd district?
No, I don't see that. I stand for the president, and when it comes in particular to the policies that he has brought to the office, the economy that he has unleashed, and the innovation and entrepreneurial spirit of America that he's unleashed, and when he stood up to China and got us in a position to have a fair level playing field with them, and started holding them accountable for things like stealing our intellectual property and the unfair trade practices they engage in. So I think those policies align very well with the people we represent in the 23rd Congressional District. So I don't see that. But I also think the people are smarter than just lumping elected officials all into one bucket or another. And so I defer to the people and their wisdom in casting their vote for the individuals that are on the ballot.
I guess I was kind of referencing the president's position on COVID-19, and it just seems like things are much worse than the way he paints it.
Well, I see the COVID-19 as we are coming to a vaccine, and I look at things optimistically, like the president. We could have a presentation of it like Joe Biden presents it, as doom and gloom, and that it's a deep, dark winter that is descending upon us. And I just don't look at life that way, nor do I look at COVID-19 that way. I look at it as the serious situation that it is, and the loss of life obviously is significant, and it's something we cannot discount, and we have to stand with those and mourn their loss and extend our thoughts and prayers and our hearts to those that have lost so many during this crisis. But we always have to have that American optimism that has served us well through these crises that have hit our country. And so I see a vaccine on the horizon. I know, talking to the scientists and the innovators in those companies, those six companies that are coming through the trials, that I'm confident again saying that, they cracked the science on the virus and that we're going to have a vaccine here. And then in the meantime, we also learned a lot, because that's what America does best. Since February, when this virus went off on American soil, we've learned a lot how to treat it. We have new treatments that have been approved, like remdesivir, that was just approved by the FDA for treatment. So we have new techniques, as simple as rolling a body over, rather than allow a patient to lay on their back, we flip them over, and that has proved to be a positive development. So things as simple as that. Our lessons taught and new relationships established to make sure that personal protective equipment is there, making sure hospitals have the resources to deal with this, the testing capacity, the 150 million super rapid Abbott tests that have now been delivered to each of our Department of Health is now out there in the field and is being deployed as we speak. So you have tremendous amount of resources that we didn't have in February that we have now. So I try to look at things optimistically, as you know, Rick, and I will continue to do that, because as my mom taught me, you can look at life when her husband died, when he was 48 and she had 12 kids to raise on her own. You could look at life as dark and gloomy, or you could look at life as throwing you a curveball, but you brush yourself up, stand up, and you move forward and make the best of it. And that's what I think Americans do best, and that's what I choose to do as we look forward.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Rick.
Thanks, Rick. I apologize, folks. We've gone a bit over, and I know Tom's got another engagement, so we're going to have to close things off for now. But please,
I do have to go talk to the. Yeah, I got to go talk to the Treasury Secretary. So I really appreciate it, guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks, everyone. Bye bye.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly.